We will call the meeting to order. Attendance.
Legislator Donaldson.
Here.
Legislator Roberts.
Yes.
Legislator Heppner.
Here.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Present.
Legislator Ronk.
Nope.
Chairwoman Bartel.
Here.
Alrighty, everybody's present. Here. Everybody's happy.
Well, apparently Ronk is not present.
I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the July 15th meeting.
I move it.
Second.
Right, moved in second. All those in favor?
Aye.
I'd like to move to amend the, approve the minutes for the August 1st special meeting.
Moved.
Second.
Moved in second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All righty. Very good. None opposed? Very good. Move on then. We'll pass them around.
We need to remind you to put your phone up.
All right, do I need to take any of these out of order, or what would you guys like? Do you
take 76, 77 out of order? 376, 277. John and I are here for the long haul.
Yeah, start saying.
I think Mr. Quigley would probably.
Yeah.
376, oh, that's right. I was wondering.
Deputy Commissioner Quigley.
John, I'm sorry. I forgot you're in the Board of Elections. Well, congratulations, by the way. I'm sure you're going to do a great job.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so
that's
we're
the rare Dave Donaldson compliment.
But remember, you start here and it's all downhill.
Though. Rare for you, I get them all the time.
There you go.
Just wait, you weren't here now.
Well, he's a constituent, so.
He's a constituent of mine. He ran against
you. I was going to say, he's a former opponent. But,
all you got to do to have Dave be nice to you is move to his district.
What's that?
I thought you well, signed he ran against
me. No.
That's going to be mean to him.
Look at what resolution he was talking about.
Well, he lost, so.
Yeah, but hey, he lost graciously.
He did.
We became friends.
Aww.
Anyway, I'm authorizing the chair of the Oscegatting Legislature to enter an agreement with the Board of Elections for expense related to the purchase of equipment and services necessary for early voting. You want to fill us in, John? Or
I'll move it.
Second.
All right. First, seconded. Go ahead.
Speaks for itself, really. Unfortunately, not much we can do about it. At the end of the day, he's probably going to add roughly $70,000 to $80,000 in annual expenses just for maintenance. But the upfront cost is getting up there towards $450,000. We're going to cover it between two different grants, and whatever we can't cover between the two different grants, we're going to hopefully cover with our shoebox money, which actually is larger than one of the grants. So. I believe this is only speaking to one grant. Yeah, and just moving the money around.
Alrighty, any questions on the issue?
No. Were they moved to it?
Yes.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. Moved
yeah,
it. Okay.
It was moved to second. Having none, call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None? Alrighty. That was pretty painless.
And then 377. That was the easy ones, the grant money.
I know, I was going to say, we probably should have pulled off the
No, I've got questions on this.
This is approving a execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into the county. No, what is this? No Wink LLC doing business as No Wink. Board of Elections. What Kelly said?
No Wink is the provider of the poll pads that will be done electronically.
Right. Any questions? Go ahead.
Is this the John? Do you know if this is the same outfit that is doing a lot of the counties that are moving to electronic poll books?
No Ink. There's three vendors. This No Ink is actually the first one to be approved by the state. No Ink has Dutchess. I believe Orange County is leaning towards No Ink, and it seems to be the leading one across the state.
Okay.
The only one approved by OGS at this time.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
You seconded it, didn't you?
I seconded it.
Oh, you did, okay.
Yeah, can I just have one more question?
We're buying as many as we can with the money allotted, right?
This is software. This contract is software.
This isn't physical
well,
hardware as well?
So this contract specifically to kitting of the iPads, which we were getting from Verizon at a discounted price thanks to
right.
an OGS contract.
Yep.
So this is primarily first-year software, but builds in the additional accessories that go with the iPad for the software, for the hardware.
Unbelievable.
The iPads are being
I understand. Yeah. But you know, it's a per number of licenses, right? On these things. So
yes.
I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, it might behoove us to get more licenses than we need in order to, you know, three even break, or, you know, we're gonna have some issues with this, because I don't know if our poll workers are keen on technology, if you understand my drift.
Our current formula is that we're trying to do one per election district, and with 14 set aside for early voting, two at each early voting location, and a percentage of extras just in case we do have breakdowns. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the sites that only have one election district, we are planning on having a second one there in case that one goes down. And then I think we'll have a couple left on hand, but we're maxing out as much as we can for the iPads.
Thank you. That's pretty much what I was looking for, because, you know, the state giveth and the state taketh away, and quite more often they taketh away, so...
The one thing we will look to evaluate in the future is that these poll pads will allow us to not have to do by election districts, so we could essentially have less poll pads per site, which could speed up the voting process as you go in to vote, depending on certain sites. But we're not evaluating that until after this year, and we got three elections next year to see what works.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we probably shouldn't try that in the presidential year. That's my only piece of advice.
Right. So the poll pads are used, are they actually used for the voting or the signing in?
Signing in only.
So we still have paper ballot.
Yeah, all the op scan. This is to replace the physical books that we had printed every year. Has the opportunity to save some serious money over the years, as long as these have a life.
We still are required by law to have a certain amount of ballots on hand in case that these go down. So there will be paper ballots. In backup.
Well, you use a paper ballot. What do you mean? That's what I just wanted
you
to
mean.
Paper.
You mean the paper poll book.
The paper poll books. Poll books. Okay, yeah. The ballots are still...
Yes.
We're still operating with the same system.
Machine.
Right. The early voting is going to have a on-demand ballot printer, but we're not having those for on election day. We're still going to print the ballots.
You basically sign in the iPad when you sign in.
Yes.
How you do?
Yeah, and it's actually, if you happen to have your ID on you, it takes like 2 seconds because you swipe your ID and you're automatically there.
Your ID? What do you mean by your ID? What do you mean by your ID?
Any
scannable driver's license?
Yeah, any government-issued ID can be used to scan in, which will automatically pull up your profile and allow you to sign. Otherwise,
can, but not must.
Yeah, it's not required. There's a couple other. Otherwise, there's a couple additional steps that. Just prolong the process.
We better be careful. That might be that warrant for you, after. Never mind. Anyone else?
What's that?
You settled up on that thing.
No, anyone else? Alrighty then. I entertain a motion to
vote. Move and second it.
You can call the vote.
Call the vote.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those in favor?
Thanks for coming, John.
All those against? None?
Mr. Chair, can we take Resolution 373 out of order?
Whatever you want, Doctor.
Oh. All right, good luck.
No problem.
Alrighty, member asked me to take 373 out of order, which is resolution proposed that is the... Ulster County Electrical Licensing Board.
Right, I'll move it.
Second.
Mr. Chair. So these are the technical amendments that came from the administration. We finalized some of these today, and so I know there's some members who wanted to go and take a look at those amendments. So at this time, I'd like to move to postpone Resolution 373.
Could you please explain the amendments, though?
Some of them were questions from legal in terms of just like different pieces that may not have made sense. Some of it was the differentiation between class A, class B, and class C licensing. So I think some of it was more just a cleanup from the original version. But considering that some of those just got done today, I want to make sure that the committee and the legislature can absorb all those different changes. They're not huge, but you know, they're still new.
Are they redlined in the...
I don't know if they're redlined in the packet, but
they
I know
are.
Vicky, but Vicky
but
I know has a red line. So
they're
well, two things. Can we get a so they're redlined as additions, but not contained within the law? Is there, can we get them
the original
in the
red
original
line?
Law with yeah. the red line in it? That would be helpful.
Sure.
And then I'm going to look at it more closely because I know, like I said, it just came today, and I'm going to have some questions. But right now, I just want to raise two concerns for you to think about, and that's in the new definitions.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the electrical contractor definition, I read it as applying, because it talks about signaling systems, I read it as cable people and telephone modem people would all have to be electricians because that's wiring for signaling systems. And in terms of the electrical work, I have a concern about including solar. You know, solar installers go through a class and they're regulated, and electricians need to sign off on the system and make the final connection, but the people who do the installation for solar systems are not required to be electricians, and I read this as saying that they would need to be, which may be an unintended consequence of this definition, but I just would ask that you look at both those two concerns within those two definitions.
Okay.
Because
I can sit down with Jennifer. You know, Jennifer drafted these, you know,
right,
these changes.
Right, one came from Rockland
so,
County, one
yeah.
came from Putnam,
yeah, so
but
I'll,
I believe
but I'll sit
that
down
they
with
made
her
more
on
substantial
that.
Changes than intended, I think.
All right, so I moved to postpone, so I don't know if
no problem.
Is there a second?
Before we postpone, Heidi, do you have a question?
Are these amendments changed so much? Because this has already been to public hearing.
This is a resolution to go back out to public hearing.
Okay.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
And this is amending the law.
So just to backtrack. So you know, after you know, right around the time of the passage of the original law, the executive's office had said that they may have some technical changes here and there. I didn't know the scope of what those changes were going to be. I mean, you know, like little bits and pieces that they identified, but then upon further review, so then I sort of just decided to give, you know, we said, fine, we'll give you time to kind of go and come up with your technical amendments. So that's why we're going through this process. Myself and Ken are the sponsors of this particular law for that reason. So what's
I mean,
seconded?
Well, another thing that we're going to do is, you know, anybody who has any suggestions on changes, you know, just make sure to reach out to Legislator Rodriguez. I think that we should have a discussion on some of the fees that are going to be charged, you know, possibly expand some of the reciprocity, you know, clauses in it. And I know that one of the things that Legislator Rodriguez and I had agreed to was to go back through and maybe loosen some of the fees and requirements on, you know, small Ulster County contractors, especially ones that have been, you know, working in this field for the better part of 30 years.
Yeah, I just, given what Chairwoman Bartel just pointed out or asked about, Have we checked with IBEW, because IBEW does both. They train electricians and they train solar installers, and their input into this law would be...
It was sent off to Sam.
Pardon?
The amended version that now includes solar? Okay.
Yeah.
Is it, yes, it was sent to Sam from IBEW?
Yeah, they
other
business.
Sam Prado,
right.
Who's the...
They typically support this.
Business manager.
Well, is even...
Usually they're titled...
Yeah, yeah,
manager.
It was sent to them, but they weigh in.
They just got done today.
Oh.
That's what I'm trying to... That's why I'm postponing
the
it, because we just...
Changes.
The technical... They had some of them done already, and then they didn't... We didn't finalize them until, like,
but the
2 or 3 o'clock today.
The
so I made sure that I sent
the
email
by them. The concept is supported by them. They supported this from the very beginning.
They helped to write it.
They helped to, they helped to write it.
Craig Jacobs is the one in charge of the training of the solar installers. That's what I was getting at.
All right, go ahead.
Again, on the solar installer issue,
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to have to do, since I just saw it today, too, I'm going to do some research. But I know that even going back in the, you know, the earlier days of solar installation, when we were looking at the installation at the county jail, the electricians wanted all solar installers to be electricians, but that was not a requirement of solar installation, and I don't believe it's currently a requirement. So again, if we're going to change that to make it a requirement that all solar installers be licensed electricians, I believe that would be a new requirement, and it would affect a lot of, I would want to speak to our solar installer businesses, not just the electricians.
Yeah, but I think a solar installer is, in other words, the electrician is one who hooks it all up.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that has to be, in other words, somebody can do a lot of different things, but once they hook up to the main line, shall we see, then you need a license at that end of it, I think.
You need to but that's what I'm saying, these definitions create very
Look at the definition. Maybe we need to make
that
sure
were not in there before this was amended. Their definitions say.
So they change the definitions?
Yes, they say they're new definitions. So they say if you're going to do this work, you must have this.
So we have to look
at that. If you're going to do electrical work, you must be an electrician.
What if you're postponing it?
It doesn't say if you're
That's why I'm postponing it.
Edgar will take care of it, or I will have him put to sleep.
I'm just asking that if he looked at it.
Okay. A second for postponement?
Oh, I thought it was second for putting him to sleep. Yeah. All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Any opposed? None.
All right. Now you can do what's your agenda. It's easier that way.
That's what we do well. We do very well. And I want to remind everybody, if you, you know, that make sure you turn your cell phones off.
Or to vibrate. It's more fun that way.
Yep.
What? That was your line for like 6 years.
Alrighty, we'll go back up to the top unless you guys want to be John, did you need anything added on, you guys?
We're here for the duration.
Oh, you're here for the duration.
Alright,
then we'll take our time.
Sure.
Okay.
Alrighty, Resolution 473, a public hearing on the Ulster County Ethics Law. Ken?
I'll move it.
Second.
Alrighty, moved and seconded. Where are we at on this?
We have a 100% redlined version in here. Do we want to go through the couple of items that there was no agreement on?
Yes. I think so, yeah.
I just have to get to my notes on where they are, that's all. The first pin that I find is on page 26, which is the prohibition on voting on collective bargaining agreements.
Right.
I don't know if anybody else found a pin before then, but that was the first one that I found.
What page is it on?
Page 26.
You were a little quicker than I was, but now I'm at that. I agree. I think it is.
Tracy, you said you were going to bring the court precedents that you had cited from other areas of the state where the courts had held that it's not a conflict.
Right, and I didn't do that. I apologize. I'm trying to get, what, you said page 26?
Page 26.
The top page says 26. Yeah, that verse is 20. Yeah, just one page off. Yeah, I did not bring that. I apologize. But it's I feel like we're just, you and I are at a disagreement on this one, with or without court precedent, probably.
Well, I mean, if I saw the precedent, because I haven't seen any, and I don't believe that our counsel has seen any. So,
okay. Unfortunately, I'm not going to get it tonight.
Yeah.
But I'll get it for you.
I mean. Yeah. All right. I mean, we could always go forward with the public hearing with it in there as it is, and then, you know, if the precedent moves me, we could change it. If not, then we, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is a do or die for you in the law.
It really concerns me taking it out. And I hear, and I've spoken both to Legislator Nolan, and you have both spoken about it at this forum, and I've spoken to Legislator Nolan again, and I hear the argument for why you would want to keep it in, which would be a change from our current law and a change from the state law.
Can you show me where in our current law it allows voting on collective bargaining?
I can, yeah. But that's going to take me a few minutes.
That's fine.
Yeah, I can get you that back up. And that's, I know, something that's been a point of contention in the current disputed case that's, you know, in an Article 78. But for me, the matter of fact is, I think it really limits a legislator's ability to do their duty if they can't weigh in on something that's been collectively bargained and does not provide a distinct benefit to an interested member of their family, someone who's covered by this. Which, by the way, we in this law have reached out much further than the state law in terms of covered. I think it's only spousal for the state. It doesn't, and probably unemancipated children, but I don't know if it even speaks to that. We go beyond that with parents and step-parents and et cetera. So I have a concern about changing that and requiring that you not be allowed to vote on a contract that's collectively bargained, and also what that would mean on a budgetary vote. But I can get you the backup.
On budget, I mean, the precedent to me has been clear on omnibus budget bills that there's no conflict, even if you have a spouse working in the county. And our ethics board has upheld that in their advisory opinions, that omnibus bills are allowed but not specific bills. Like, and there's not an omnibus union contract. You know, there's a different union contract for each individual unit.
Yeah. I mean, I can get you the backup. And I'm not sure where I'll be if we, you know, it's not necessarily a make or break for me, because I believe that this is a better piece of legislation in terms of the board. So I'd like to see the makeup of the board this way, but I have grave concerns if we make that change.
I mean, again, it's not necessarily like the be-all, end-all for me either. I would not like to see it changed. You know, I want to make it clear because I feel like it was made less than clear to others on the body. I didn't put this in here specifically into this law. This is in the Orange County law.
Right.
So it's not that, you know, I changed what was written in the Orange County law to suit a specific situation happening here in Ulster County, you know, but the Orange County law is equally written in this manner.
All right, well, anybody else have anything on this? I mean, I share Tracy's concerns with this. I mean, you know, you're talking about a contract of 1,000 people and not anybody, you know, it's not negotiated for anyone individually. And my concern would be is, how far can you take that in dealing with voting on the budget and such? I mean, you're going to be voting on every raise of everyone. In other words, would you vote on a raise when you vote on the budget? So, I mean, that's, in other words, if it's something that's individual, that's a totally different ballgame. Like, if they were appointed to a position and they're given, I don't think they should be, you know, a salary or whatever.
Or even if they already work for the county, but, we end up an entire classification of employee,
right.
You know, suddenly gets, like, a raise. Like, let's say within a department, right?
Right. In other words, it would be inappropriate for me to vote on my wife's, if she worked for the county, if she was going to be bumped up in a position, it would be inappropriate for me to vote on that. But if she's part of a civil service agreement and 1,000 people are part of that agreement, I don't know. It's not an individual thing.
Well, I mean, you know, just to your point there, first off, to the budget, I mean, you know, again, it's been clearly demonstrated, you know, in multiple, in our ethics board and other ethics boards, in AG's opinions, that you can vote on omnibus issues like the budget. So I don't think it goes as far as the budget. On the other hand, to your point about the 1,000 member unit, I'm not sure if that's where it's at with CSEA or not, but You know, there could be a bargaining unit in the county with 20 people in it or 15 people in it. So you can't just think about it with the one union
by volume. Okay.
You know, it could be a very small unit. We have smaller bargaining units.
What is our smallest unit?
S level's got to be right. Got to be the representative by NYSIT.
Yeah.
That got created as a result of. Us sticking with the flex plan.
That's the middle managers, right?
Which is, I think that's like, 20?
And the SS attorney. There's a handful.
Yeah, I'm saying it's like 25 people, I think.
Yeah, it's not very
big. But even those, none of them are negotiated by any, you know, they're not negotiated by us in the legislative body at all. You know, it's, in other words, the...
No, but a vote's a vote. I mean, you know,
we have to vote on whatever it is, but it's okayed by the, whatever the bargaining unit is.
But there's
they
nothing...
They have to approve it, and the bargaining unit approves it, and then the executive negotiates it, you know, through attorneys, and then they come up with the, here it is.
Well, we have to vote upon it, but,
you know,
but voting upon it isn't necessarily just approving it. We could disapprove it, and it could be a closely divided legislature... like we have now, and, you know, one vote could make the difference either way, either for passage or not passage, and if the legislator doesn't think that the employees have gotten the best deal that they can get, they might vote against it. I mean,
so
that's,
that
you know...
Then go both ways also, then it could cause a problem if you have, what, three or four people that in the legislature that happens to have a relative that works in CSEA, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And that would not be, that's not really uncommon.
I think that the problem that you're saying would be caused is less of a problem than the problem that you're looking at if the votes could be swung by people whose family members are in the unit. When I went to NYSAC, new legislator or new appointed elected official training, 12 years ago, they spent a long time on ethics. And, you know, there was two things. There was, you know, they spent a lot of time on the appearance of impropriety, and they spent a lot of time on, you know, financial impacts of, you know, of your being a legislator. And, you know, to me, there's no more fundamental, you know, ethics issue than a vote that you're making could lead to money going into your family pocket. And that's there in a collective bargaining contract, because there's, you know, typically salary increases, but there could be salary increases, there could be increases to health insurance, there could be, you know, decreases in benefits that could be negative to, you know, the impacted family. And again, I think too many people are making this about one particular issue that's been going on in the past year. I'm thinking about it more in the bigger picture.
Well, I'm thinking about it in the bigger picture also. I'm just looking at it from the long time, I've had people vote, on contracts in the past.
I know.
And I've seen people not vote for them in the past. In
mm-hmm.
other words, in other words, the attorneys tended to tell them to, it's up to you. You know, you can recuse yourself or you can vote. I mean, it's your conscience to call.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the way it's been running. Go ahead, Mark.
Just a quick note from County Executive's Office. We just got this marked up bill today, so we have not had the county attorney look at it. If you're going to set a public hearing, tomorrow night or through the committee tonight, we've had no chance to really look at the substantive issues. I know one of the main questions that we have that we need to go to the county attorney with, and I talked to the chair about this morning, is whether this requires a mandatory referendum. I know a kind of informal opinion of the previous county attorney said it didn't, but I think that
the previous two county attorneys.
I think that has changed. It's significant.
Imagine
it changes
that.
The powers of the county executive. There's just a few other substantive changes that we just like to look at and evaluate.
I have
a month to do so.
How would you...
Well, I guess we've only been talking about this for 12 months, so I can understand why we need another month.
We got a marked up copy today.
Well, we've been...
Have you asked for one?
We've been doing that. All right, Ken, that's enough.
It's enough. All right, then.
No need to banter back and forth with it if you want
to. I
understand where you're coming from.
No, we'll go back and find out if you bantered back and forth on things like this before.
Doing this for the boots. Really? All right, we've been doing this. Ken is exactly right. We've been doing this for over a year. I think it's more than 12 months, but I'm not sure. But it seems like at least that.
Well, we've been talking it for probably over the year.
Yes, and so.
There are redline changes that were made in the last month or so that have considerably changed it. Like, the ability of the county executive to remove members has been completely taken out. And in fact, the lines.
I think that's the next place we're going, isn't it?
Okay. You want to get there.
I thought damages were next.
I was just making
so what do you think would you like to do with this, Ken?
So, Ken, whether it goes to public hearing or not, we still got to get to the bottom of this with your changes, the pins, so why don't we continue?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Are you willing? Do you want to postpone it another month, or what do you want to do? I'll default to you.
I think that last month we said, you know, all right, we're going to get a redline version and we're going to move it to public hearing, but I don't care, whatever.
I agree with you. Okay. What does the rest of you feel about this?
I'm fine with a little public hearing.
Can we go through the rest of the pins?
Yeah, I do think we should go through the
pins. Yeah, the next pin was the $10,000 fine. So there is in your materials a list of fines and penalties from other counties. They're kind of across the board, but the one, if you were going to say that there was one fine level that occurs mostly, it's $10,000. It's $10,000 in Sullivan, it's $10,000 in Rockland, it's $10,000 in Saratoga.
Mm-hmm. Although Albany also, I think, looks like it has damages.
Albany has damages. Yeah, Albany has other $2,500 fine for each violation. But then has damages to the county for any losses or increased cost as a result of the violation, a civil forfeiture to the county of a sum of equal to three times the value of any financial benefit. Oof. I'm not getting into that. I have no interest in that.
Ken, but look at it. It's already done for you.
We spent a lot of time on damages in the human rights law. I'm not going to get into damages here.
You know, you just know
that'll postpone it until 3 years from now.
I think John and I could revisit that one. What
page was that?
It's a separate.
It's right here. It's a separate document. Here, I got you.
I don't need to see that.
What page is it? Page 31.
Yeah, page 31. That's the next page.
I don't think that $10,000 is excessive because it's a not to exceed. And maybe, you know, because I believe our current law has $10,000 as a maximum. And if I had seen our ethics board play fast and loose with the high end of $10,000, it might concern me, but they haven't. And I'm always in favor of a higher not to exceed, but not setting individual higher penalties, because it allows for those determining the fine to have, you know, the ability to differentiate between a small violation or a more egregious violation or repeat violations.
Right. Well, I mean, ours is also $10,000 or the value of any benefit obtained by the violator, whichever is greater.
Right.
So if somebody takes $100,000, but that's why. Well, no. I'm saying that at least addresses any concern of like, oh, well, you know, if you steal $100,000, you're only gonna get fined $10,000. It's like, no, you're gonna get fined
$100,000. Yeah, $100,000.
Okay. Well. Okay. I mean.
You're going
forgive.
To jail.
I'm just saying. You know what? Fine. $11,000. I don't know. Is that still got criminal?
But regardless, the wrong word to use, and that's what's being said. So,
right, yeah. So
but you know what I mean.
Where's everybody at with these fines?
I feel like $10,000 is excessive, especially. I mean, when you have or the value of the finance, if the financial benefit is much more than $10,000, then you might be fined more than $10,000. But I think $10,000 is excessive, even based on our.
But you're thinking about only legislators having this apply to them. You know, you've got a comptroller makes $100,000, county executive makes $135,000.
the sheriff makes good knows what, depending on whatever we decide to give him that periodic compensation review committee wanted.
You know, we have a volunteer board assessing fines for ethics violations. I think it's up to interpretation.
Right, and these are ethics. You know, if it's more than an ethics violation,
then it
becomes becomes criminal. Then it becomes a whole different ballgame. Then you know the fines are increasing. The jail time comes into light. There's a lot of things that come into light. This is an ethics,
yes,
not a criminal, and we can't really confuse that mirror.
If you have a criminal case, then the money would come back, but there would be no penalty. So if you had a criminal case and you got a judgment, that person might do jail time. They might have to pay back whatever they took. This would allow them also to be fined.
Right.
Which I think might be appropriate in that circumstance.
But that what we're talking about is because it's an ethics charge, they can be fined on the other stuff, and they can be, if a criminal case, they can also be fined a significant amounts of money, jail time, so on and so forth. But
they could, but then where does that fine go? If the court fines them, then that would go to whatever, I don't know.
But I don't know.
That wouldn't come to the county.
Right, but I'm not getting the argument. This is an ethics charge. And so, in other words, I believe it's excessive when you're running at $10,000 on an ethics charge. Because you can get three or four of them. So that totals $7,500 right there. Go ahead. He hasn't spoken yet.
I understand. Again, I think Dave makes a really good point. We have to remember what these fines are being levied for. And I think, the problem is it's finding that balance where that it's impactful, but at the same time, you don't want it to be that someone for an ethics charge is being put, because it kind of leaves it open-ended, in a very, $10,000, per, it's a significant amount of money, for an ethics charge and for, a person, that's serving as a legislator for a salary of $14,000. So I think we need to kind of think about the balance, and find an in-between, Dutchess County, a neighbor that we often look to, they set it at $2,500. They have a little bit more specific provisions based on more specific violations such as failure, to follow your disclosure. They specifically outline making a false statement. But, I think, I would lean, although I understand the argument from Legislator Ronk, I lean to more of a lower number going forward.
I mean, you want Kevin first?
Yeah, thank you. And in this case, I do have to agree with the Madam Chair that I think 10,000 is too high. 5,000 is probably more reasonable. But, I do get what Ken's saying. But some charges may be more, damaging than others. Some may be done, innocently. It could still be an ethics violation. I'd be willing to go with the 10,000 as long as there's no piling on. Like if you vote for something in committee and you vote for it on the floor and it gets canceled, so you have to vote for it again, you might have three charges, $30,000, that would be excessive.
And that's basically what would happen, and that's what has happened. In other words, recently with the one particular person that we know, they got piled on yeah. the same vote, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And then it's piled on the same discussion.
Yeah, so, does it count if you talk about it in caucus too? Is that an ethics violation?
Apparently, it would.
So
you're talking now. You're up to 50-40 grand.
If you have one general offense, let's make it 10,000. Let's not make it 30,000.
How do we do? I mean, is there a way? Are you amenable to that? How do we do that? Make it specific to one offense?
Well, you could make it. How you could do that is, I think, to accomplish what Kevin's saying, you could make it, not to exceed, not to exceed $10,000 per offense or not to exceed.
No, in aggregate.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But then you know you could do not to exceed $5,000 per, like, just you could do a per offense, and then you can do an aggregate of offenses, you know, but also not to exceed $25,000 for an aggregate of offenses. Is how I think that's what you're looking to get
at.
Well,
it was not to exceed $10,000 for an aggregate.
Period.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's saying $10,000.
Yeah,
period.
That's a little difficult to do. Yes, he would.
I think, right, so suggested language might be, because the situation I think you're contemplating is multiple offenses for different sections of the ethics law, but arising from the same transaction or based upon the same transactions.
Agreed.
So you could use language to that effect, which is, you know, not to exceed $10,000 in the aggregate for any violation of the ethics law arising from the same nucleus of fact or the same events or same transaction or something to that effect. So if you vote on something three times, you can be convicted three times, but $10,000 is all you're going to face total. So that might be a way to address it.
Right. I would be amenable to that, because I have the same concerns that Legislator Roberts saying. I mean, that's really my concern about the 10,000 is not the number strictly, but the fact that it could be levied for all those different conversations and used to pile on for life on the return. So okay. Any way you want to approach
it. Yeah, well, in the meantime, since we're going to have to postpone it another month, in the meantime, we'll come up with language that, you know, and I'll circulate it to the committee. And if we could just, can we copy, is there a way in the email you can copy every county employee and send everybody a redline version so we make sure that nobody is missing?
Is that maybe we could do that, I'm not sure.
Is that included, like,
but
the
sheriff's
office?
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. You know, not to exceed $10,000, but arising from, you know, any single.
I think that's a creative way to look at it.
The problem still arises. It still has some of the same problem, because what ends up happening is now the person voted on that four times. So if you charge them $2,500 for each one of them, that's $10,000, right? I mean, for
right, but what Kevin's saying is now they won't get, now they're not going to, you know, they're not going to have the possibility of getting hit with a $30,000 bill, a $40,000 bill.
Because even Dutchess, even though it's lower, it's still, it actually escalates.
All right.
Yeah.
So I just want to, you know, remind us that some of these ethics violations can be pretty egregious. And if we have a situation where somebody has done something that we and the public would like to have being a serious fine, that it seems to me like there should be room to go up to. $10,000 is not much for some of the things, and some of the other counties that include, you know, mentioning, you know, lying to the ethics board, lying about the situation, intention to deceive or defraud, those kind of things at some point could be something that we feel a $10,000 fine would be pretty minimal. So I think we need to be cautious not to pile on, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 for this, you know, for a vote, is the case that we're tending to think of. But there may be some other ethics violations that could come up where we think that $2,500 would be very much a slap on the wrist.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that when the ethics board meets and creates their bylaws and whatnot, that they could require people to make sworn depositions in these things, which then makes it perjurious if you're lying. I don't think that we need to individually note each time, you know, somebody does something like lying or things like that. Only I imagine that an ethics board would create a situation where you're swearing an oath on some of these documents and in some of these hearings. I'm not sure for sure. I don't. You'd have to look at the individual bylaws.
Yeah.
It would make sense to me, but I'm not on the ethics board.
I wouldn't argue for that, but
yes.
All right, so let's look at the other bins, whatever ones we have.
That was the last one, but I would like to go back to the removal of board members.
What page is that on?
10. I believe at the last meeting I was the one who was arguing in favor of a scenario that would have had the county executive being able to remove the for cause appointments that he had recommended, mm-hmm. the three appointments that are in his direct control, his or her direct control, right. and the legislature, by a vote of two-thirds, being able to remove for cause any of the three ones that are recommended to the county executive by legislative leadership. I think I was the only one who agreed with it last time, but I'll put it back on the table for discussion, citing Deputy County Executive's comments on how removing the county executive's ability to remove for cause may cause this to have to go to public referendum, which we're going to miss now.
I just have a quick question. For the seventh member that's appointed by the board, how would their removal be subject to...
That's a good question.
To the board, or would it be two-thirds of the... how would you set it up for that seventh member?
I would assume that they would be removed by the board itself. Yeah. Because they're appointed by the board. But
what if there's a 3-3 tie on removing the seventh member? I mean, that's...
Well, then,
For the edification of anybody who hasn't heard this before, currently, I believe the Orange County Board is operating with six members because the six members couldn't decide on the seventh member. Yeah. Because it creates a stalemate, you know. Either that or you're going to have some intergovernmental cooperation.
That's an issue, though. I mean, that's a problem.
You can have a six-member board. You just need a majority of the right. six members to... So you need four of them to do anything.
But that speaks to the people that appointed them. Tell you the truth.
Might require a little compromise. I like even number boards for that reason.
When you're appointing people to ethics boards, you should try to appoint people that are, neutral, apolitical, yeah. As neutral as possible. So that speaks to the people that appointed, they must be really appointed, political acts, basically, yeah, which is unfortunate, yes.
Just on quick view this afternoon, I think even the redline version now, regardless of whether the county executive can remove, I don't think anybody, this is just a typo, I believe, but just pull it up. You've redlined actually out the word remove, which, so there is no mechanism to remove.
Right.
In the
current that's a typo.
That's definitely a typo.
Right.
Remove
so
that just
has
needs
to be put back
tweaked.
In the or
taken. Remove for cause needs to be put back in. Yeah, but that's just a quick typo with redlining.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. Can I ask? What's Orange County's mechanism right now? In terms of removal.
I think it was removed by the county executive.
For all members.
Yeah. That was how it came out the first way. So, to the best of my knowledge, it's removal by the county executive. Usually, for cause is very specific, which is why I didn't have a problem with it in the first place. And if you're going to remove somebody for cause, you're probably going to want to do it in haste. You're probably not going to want to wait for the next legislative meeting. That was my reasoning for not having a huge problem with the removal for cause.
And there's an adjudicatory proceeding.
Yeah.
It's probably also the thing that makes it somewhat legal. I mean, so you have the county executive appointing everybody, but certain ones are nominated by the legislature. If you had the county executive only be able to remove certain ones, I think that's an issue, and that's probably why Orange County has written it that way. General municipal law, again, says that the chief executive officer is the one to appoint.
Yep.
Nick, you want to weigh in on that?
You have the copy, but that does reflect my recollection, which is Orange County kept it that way. So the reason that they dispense with the general municipal law objections is that even under this law, the executive still appoints just from a reduced pool, right? So they still appoint, and I think that's why they had it up as they still remove. So this has been changed now at this juncture, and I understand the issue being raised is, does that invoke the memorandum requirement?
So when you put remove for cause, what does that mean? What is cause?
How is cause defined?
Well, they're not serving at the pleasure of, so we can't just remove them without it going through due process, which notice he's going to be entitled, unless the person just wants to resign, they're going to be entitled to a day in court, so to speak.
Right.
Before
so
the hearing officer.
Says, prior to removal, the Board of Ethics member shall be given written notice of the grounds for removal and an opportunity to demand and receive adjudicatory proceeding before a neutral and disinterested hearing officer to be provided by the Ulster County Attorney, is how it's written right now. So, you know, they're going to go out and hire an attorney.
Now, would the legislature be able to, would we be able to put something in where the legislature could remove somebody with a two-thirds vote?
Well, I think
that's the way it is now.
Yeah,
that's,
what we, yeah.
That's what's in there currently. Is.
Yeah, but if and we went then, back to the other one, if we went back to the idea of the removal of cause by the county executive, so it's not an issue where you're taking power away, and it's not an issue where you need to go to referendum because of that. I mean, I have less problem with it when it talks about removal for cause than serving. You know, my biggest problem was the original one,
yep.
As you know, you and I worked on the change,
yep.
Was the idea that it was about, you know, the way they originally had it was they served at the pleasure. So, in other words, hey, if you don't like the way you said something, you're gone. Which, the cause, it changes that,
yep.
Significantly. But what about the idea that could we also have the legislature also be able to remove someone by a two-thirds vote? I mean, it's sort of like a check, another check, by saying that, in other words, we have a county executive that's not, you know, doing what they should be, getting rid of somebody, but they're not.
I think it's almost worse.
I mean, maybe I'm worrying too much, but the thought. I mean, what do you think? Anybody have any comment on that? No? Yes, go ahead, Mark.
I would just recommend if you were going to do that, maybe the council, that it would say a two-thirds vote could recommend removal.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
That's actually, I truthfully was just thinking that, believe it or not, but
sure.
only because it mirrors the way that they're appointed. In other words, they're appointed based on your nomination, so, you know...
Upon recommendation.
Right, upon recommendation, the executive can also move. Either way, they're going to get due process if the board members...
Yeah, because there is a process.
I want my day in court, and it's got to be for cause.
So,
no matter how it comes to the board, it's
so,
going to end up that way.
Yeah,
so how about putting it together like... before the thought leaves my head. So, members of the Board of Ethics may be removed for cause by the county executive, or may be recommended to be removed for cause by a vote of at least two-thirds of the county legislature.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I'm good with that.
Uh-huh. Can I also ask, it says, prior to the removal, the Board of Ethics member shall be given written notice of the grounds. I would like for the legislature to also be noticed if it's the executive that's providing for removal, because I wouldn't want it to be something that was happening in secret if the executive was recommending or asking for removal, especially of a legislative appointment. I would want the legislature to know that was happening.
Such notification.
Ours requires a vote. So
it requires us a notification to the legislature, to the...
Chairperson
of the legislature.
Minority and majority leaders, since the three have appointments, maybe? You know, however you want to.
Yeah, because they have the appointments, so they're recommending appointments, sorry. So it would make sense that all three of them were notified on that. So we'll add that. Everybody is in agreement with that, correct?
Can I? Just on that issue, as so long as our attorneys tell us that that doesn't make the notice of cause a public document.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
Because that's my concern about giving, when you said the legislature might, you know, defense bell started to ring, and I thought that's going to make it a public document.
So can we figure out how maybe it's...
But you know what? It'll be a public document anyway, eventually. You know that's...
Eventually, if it happens,
believe me.
How that's correct. If I may, how would county law supersede state open meetings law? Or state open document?
Well, this ethics law is filled with those kinds of things where...
There are things in here that are kept
confidential.
Yeah, you know, the open meetings law allows for things to be kept confidential.
So that your accusation isn't isn't public until it's proven guilty.
Yes, because they could, because it's not an open meetings law situation. It's the, you know, exactly, it's FOIL. But also on top of that, right. You know, given the fact that even with our existing ethics board, you know, there are pieces of it that are, you know, that are exclusively confidential with regards to, like, when you're, you know, for example, you know, making the accusation, you know, so anyway, regardless, though,
complaints must be signed, but they are kept confidential.
So, with regards to this, where are you proposing that amendment, by the way? It's going to be where?
On page 10, yeah. We will undelete remove for cause by the county executive.
Keep it in there.
Or maybe recommended, or well, maybe no. Recommended to be
but
removed.
Do we even want the or? Meaning, like, yeah. Shouldn't it? No, because what I'm trying to say is that, but shouldn't it basically be that in every instance that the legislature recommends a removal by a two-thirds vote?
No, because then the county executive would essentially allow for what I had mentioned in the beginning, which was the county executive would, in theory, be able to remove by a vote, remove for cause his appointments, but, you know, and then the legislature would.
Because the or actually strikes me as actually being more problematic, but all right.
But then we're back to the issue of the question of
correct.
Whether or not it has to go to referendum if we change the power, which is the right issue.
But you're not changing the power if you're recommending.
Well, yeah.
No, we're not. But that's what Ken is trying to solve right now.
Right.
We're working collaboratively.
So would you say removed for cause by the county executive upon his or her own initiative or upon recommendation?
That's the way to say it.
I like that.
Two-thirds of the county legislature.
That's why you get the big bucks.
Just earned it.
But the
and Nick will email that language to Jay have included.
Very good.
I got something on that.
Yep.
Doesn't it make more sense to give the county executive and the legislature blanket authority to start the removal process instead of just picking 3-3? I mean, to me, that seems like it could be
this
problematic.
This does.
No, that does.
Okay.
Yeah, we could recommend any one of them to the county executive that we feel that. But I mean, that's a 2/3 vote. That would be.
Just going to go out on a limb here and say that we're spending an insane amount of time on something that's likely not going to happen.
Throwing
that out there.
Right. But, you know, sometimes you never know. Go ahead.
And one other difference between. We made this change, so in Orange County, in the same section, it said. Receive an adjudicatory proceeding before a neutral and disinterested hearing officer to be provided by the County of Ulster. There said the County of Orange. We changed it to County Attorney. I'm not sure that's the best.
I mean, choice? Just because that's the entity in the county that hires outside counsel normally. I think that the County Attorney hires all administrative hearing officers out of their budget.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that's
accurate,
right? How we have it in the human rights law.
Yeah.
While you're discussing this,
yep.
Can I just bring up one thing? I mean, it seems like we're getting closer towards January, but to the extent that increases potentially budget, is it possible that this could go into effect January 1st, 2020?
That's one of the things I was going to bring up at the end of the conversation, because that's when the board is disbanded and repopulated anyway.
Okay.
And also with a new legislature, makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Everybody's happy?
Ecstatic.
I was going to say.
So we had happiness.
The last portion is the effective date, which I now would like to read. This local law shall take effect January 1st, 2020.
Sounds good.
I'm second that.
How do we populate the board? I mean, so then we just have no ethics board for a period of time, essentially until February.
You would effectively not have one yet for a month.
Well, no, we won't be able to get appointments done and proceed. I mean, usually our first meetings.
I don't see it as a problem. I don't know what you think.
You may not have one for 3-4 weeks. That's not a big deal because at the time when they, you know, they have to get to things, investigate them anyway.
It'll be the wild, wild west of ethics in Ulster County.
Yeah, everybody.
It's a 3-month reprieve. Anybody that wants to do it.
There won't be a board, but there will be a law.
It's like robbing a bank while the parade's going on and all the police officers are really clocking around.
We'll be having fun. We can all be on ethical for about a month.
Get them back in order.
All righty, let's get back in order here.
There will be a law.
next. All right, so we postpone that to the final.
I will make a insanely reluctant motion to postpone.
I'll second that.
And I will insanely accept that motion.
Bobby Ayala's
all those
right
in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Any opposed? Having none, let's move on. Well, we're doing well. We're postponing again.
That's our third of the night.
Alrighty.
Here we go. Buckle up.
Rules. The rules of order to modify resolution deadline. Well, apparently, Lynn, you can give me an update on here. You guys came up with a
second.
You came up with a compromise of sorts.
We did, and I think we expect some flexibility as we're trying to work this out. But with the changes that have been made, we know the exec's office has worked with us on this. And I know it benefits our own staff in helping, and I think it's going to help us in the long run be able to get questions answered before standing committee.
Well, I know Vicki was ecstatic about it.
Yeah. So,
alrighty,
we
so
have all the
changes was it actually goes from 12 to 10 days, is that correct?
Exactly.
And that's basically it.
Well, yes, other than the one that was made prior, which is if the standing committee hadn't met,
right.
So the standing committee of jurisdiction,
yes.
It would go there before it would come here, so we're not offloading all this onto this group.
Yeah, because
Kevin and I don't want that.
Nope, we were very sensitive to that.
Yeah, we've had that happen in the past. So.
I believe that we need to officially make the amendment, do we not?
Yep.
I move that we replace the word 12 with the word 10.
I'll second.
Then we also have,
all
have
those in
the,
favor?
The
aye.
Original
aye.
Jurisdiction.
Aye. Do all
any
of
opposed?
If you want to do it
you
that
basically
way.
Just
didn't we already do that one previously?
As amended in front of you would be. Mr.
Minority Leader, would you just?
Well, I will amend my motion to be amending it to as it's sitting in front of us.
I'll second that.
I thought we'd done that previously.
No.
Yes. Okay. So all those in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Opposed? Having none. All right.
Thank you very much.
For the vote on the, I'd like to call the vote on the issue, unless you want to discuss it.
Just on the issue, it's my understanding that part of the agreement is meetings with the county executive and committee chairs.
Yeah.
I have a request I've made other times, but I actually have a solution to it now. If possibly we could have two sets of meetings, which would avoid the problem with quorum of the legislature, and you have, committees 1 through 4 meet, chair and deputy chair, and then committees, 5 through 8, 1 through 4, 5 through 8, however we can do it so deputy chairs can be involved in the discussion. Yep. I think it's valuable to have deputy chairs there as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm willing to work out any of that. I mean, I would say that it's possible, in terms of ways and means crossing the line for so many resolutions, that's the one committee I'd like to be at both sets of meetings if they could. But we'll work it out. We'll figure it out.
I mean, there's got to be a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. And I will also say that although I think that this needs another couple readings, I'm just going to let it go. I really do. But I think it's a significant change and should go back to 2 readings, but I'm going to let it go. I'm not going to.
Alrighty.
What's the significant change, though? I'm just trying.
It's a different number of. It's a different number of days. It fundamentally changes the number of days.
You actually
also changed the
original jurisdiction.
But again, I just.
Okay.
All right, well,
by the way, this will be part of Kenny's lawsuit against us at some point, so it's fine.
Alrighty, so
the vote.
I
feel strongly
like
it was my. I'd be having 2 readings.
I'm actually surprised
I'd like to call the vote on the issue.
I'm feeling generous.
We don't know. There is an argument that it is a substantial change, but there's an argument that it's not. And if you're willing to accept that it's not and not.
I got hills to die on. I got hills I'm not going to die on. This
right,
is what I'm not going to die
good.
On.
So, in that case, I'd entertain a motion for the issue. It's been.
Exhaustion.
I think we already moved it.
Seconded.
Yeah, we did.
On the vote.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, good.
Here's the whole
thing. Ken, you and I will sit down.
We voted on something.
I'd like that.
We're on a roll now.
We passed our third resolution of the night.
All righty, now let's go to that. Resolution 355, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 6. increasing the salary and hours of the Commissioner of Social Services to be held on Tuesday, September 10th.
Can we do 272?
What happened to 272?
Oh, did I jump past it?
Yeah,
well,
you did.
Well, I thought that was on purpose.
I'm working on this. Well, we started this one. Let's get through it.
Quick one.
Okay.
Oh, for the commissioner?
All right. On the commissioner issue, there is a couple little things on this. I always thought somebody that worked in these positions work whatever amount of hours it is required.
Sure. And it works about 70.
Right. But you're putting down from 35 to 40. So, I mean, that's a little... I mean, I'm not going to... The other issue is we're moving into a budget time, and I always have a problem with putting raises in on people prior to the budget. So, I mean, I have no problem when we can move forward on this, but make it my mindset would make it effective January 1st.
Can I ask a question about the 35 to 40 hours? Is that how we deal with all of our department heads? They're all... By hour, I mean, I think I thought of them as management and therefore not hourly.
They all have an hourly rate. And they're
all of our staff for management,
it
they
all,
have hourly rates.
It all backs into that.
Don't get comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, Ellie came before us how many times?
They work, you know, however many hours
to make the job
complete. To make the job
complete,
work.
So,
no matter what it is.
Yep.
But everybody's factored in hourly?
Yes.
Even the executive?
Yes.
Is an hourly rate?
35.
Yes.
I don't know, I'm just joking.
Well, how many hours are the executive factored on?
35.
I was right.
Wow.
I know.
I think. I mean, actually, it's a little different. He has to, elected officials are different. You all have to.
Yeah, because of how we're accounted for.
But that's for retirement purposes. That's like.
I think that's what the 35 hours is. I think that qualifies as full time for retirement purposes of the state retirement system.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have a choice.
Nope.
A
waste of time.
I mean, does any department head?
I claim a minimum of hours.
And it was mostly
still.
Right.
No one's ever going to question.
Let's have one conversation again. I'm sorry. I let it go for a bit. Anyway, on the issue, anybody else want to speak? I mean, I said my piece.
I was willing to let it go to public hearing as is, but I expressed the same sentiments that you're expressing now in Ways and Means last Tuesday. You know, we're in the middle of a compensation study, and we're increasing in the middle of the year, and this is not the only position that's had a mid-year salary increase already.
Which other ones have had increases mid-year?
I'd have to talk to Natalie. She's got a list.
Okay.
Well, my mind said, can we change the resolution to say effective January 1st?
I mean, we could, but that's a conversation I think that we should also have in Ways and Means, and Lynn's not here anymore. She's coming back. Okay.
I think it's an issue that's before us.
We're looking at it for legal sufficiency. That's the thing.
The reason why it's in front of us.
It doesn't matter. Yes.
I mean, I just have a couple points. So this is not increasing. This is increasing the hours. So I would understand why you wouldn't want to change someone's rate of pay mid-year. I would just want to differentiate that. Also, the vast majority of this salary is picked up by the state of New York and not a county share. I think it has... I think it's like even at the full year annualized rate, it's like a $3,000 increase to the county.
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. It's funny because, you know, I'm planning on voting yes, but... Every argument you just made is exactly wrong. So I'm just sorry. Just, understand that right now. Here's the reality. Mike has asked for a raise for time in memoriam. He's worth it. We don't really have a lot of other good options. I mean, that's just the reality of it. All this other stuff is sort of just some smoke and mirrors, which I appreciate on a normal day, but right now it's hot and I'm sweaty and I don't want to deal with that. So, but each of those arguments is...
Go to the minority office. It's a freezer.
I'll go over there later.
35 to 40-hour argument just doesn't hold any water whatsoever with me.
Well, it's being increased. The hours are being increased, so the salary increases.
Because it's not like you're increasing retirement. As soon as you start talking about state retirement, we're on the hook for that. You know what I mean? You know,
but it's not even the state retirement
how many years in at that rate overall. Remember, because it becomes your overall salary.
But it's all about the salary.
Yeah,
it's not about the hours.
No,
the hours don't increase.
Get back to this, please.
We're on it.
Well, that's what I want to move on with.
All right.
How do we...
All right. I would recommend moving it on, Mr. Chair, and let Ways and Means sort of address this issue, although I think we can send a note along to Ways and Means with regards to it.
But it's a public hearing. We're going to have to vote on it.
But it already came out of Ways and Means, so it'll be the next time.
No, I'm just saying, but for our purposes, like, you know, we're supposed to be dealing with, like, generally speaking, with just, you know, legal sufficiency, which in this case, it's legally sufficient. The dollar amount issue is a Ways and Means issue.
I tend to agree with Legislator Rodriguez that we should move forward as is with the public hearing.
So. All right. All those in favor of moving forward with the public hearing?
Can I go?
Yeah.
Can you amend the time?
Oh, the time.
Since you postponed some others, I would love it if you would amend the time of the public hearing to 6:10.
Okay.
That'd be great.
I move that we amend the time of the public hearing to 6:10 p.m.
Second.
I don't like this precedent.
All those in favor changing it to 6:10?
Aye. She's actually helping us, so.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
No, it's supposed to be helping.
Well, we don't have to sit around for 20 minutes staring at each other.
I'll sit there no matter what.
You want to thank Legislator Mahler for that suggestion?
Absolutely.
I was going to say. I think about the protest.
All right,
I'm sorry,
Manager Joe. I skipped right by.
Got a T-shirt.
Please don't hold it against me.
No, not at all.
All righty, we're going to go back to Resolution 272. I skipped over that by mistake, and setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 5, local law amending the Code of County of Ulster to include mandatory food scrap composting by large generators.
I'll move it for discussion.
I'll second.
6:15. All righty, moved and seconded for discussion. Do you want to let Manager fill us in first?
Sure.
Anna?
Well, just a couple of things I would like to say, and that is this has also been a long process. We started, I think, late last fall, meeting with key stakeholders, and have tried to address every possible concern that they have. I think there are a few that still need to be addressed or considered, but we've also scheduled one more stakeholder meeting to occur before the public hearing with the intention of, if any legislator or member of the public has any questions, at a public hearing there's no opportunity for dialogue, and this has arisen out of a very collaborative process, including the haulers themselves, the food waste processors, and large generators. And you know, there was some question. Oh, and the other major thing to understand is that when we started this process, we didn't know whether or not the state would pass a law. It had been sitting up in the state legislature for several years. So we went through and developed our own law, and then with the budget in April, the state passed a law that will impact large generators that generate more than 2 tons a week, and that will start in 2022. So what we did was we recrafted this law to align it with the state law. Anyone covered by the state law will just answer to that after January 1st, 2022. But this law is more inclusive. It includes starting in January 2020, with enforcement starting on Earth Day, April 22nd, 2020, those same generators that generate 2 tons a week or more. So for 2 years, essentially, they will be a pilot for New York State. And I want to say of the, I have to look at the numbers, but roughly between 1 tons and 2 tons or more, there are about 50 of those generators, and then there's 150 more, if my memory serves me, that generate between 0.5 ton and 1 ton.
and they would be phased in over the next couple of years, so that by 2022, we would already have the folks generating 2 tons or more, the folks generating 1 ton or more, and then in 2022, it would be 3/4 of a ton, and the following year, it would be 1/2 a ton. So when the state law goes into effect, it would cover anyone under 2 tons a week. And when you know, 2 tons might not sound so like a lot, but it's 4,000 pounds. The jail, for example, generates 700 pounds of food waste a week, and that's not even 1 ton, so they wouldn't be included. 1,000 pounds.
Really, that's all the jail generates?
Pardon?
That's all the jail generates?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought that would be much
on that.
I don't know why. I thought it would be.
Well, I think the headcount's probably pretty low now.
The other thing we've done is we've been in communication with the executive branch, and we have shifted from a recommendation that originally included the Department of Health to that it would be up to the county attorney how the enforcement is handled, and which department would be responsible for education and receiving annual reports. And there is a process to review the progress over the course of the few years that it's being phased in. The other difference between our law and the state law is that it includes schools and healthcare facilities. And the reason for doing that is that we've had positive experience in Ulster County already with schools and healthcare facilities participating with very little difficulty. And then the last thing that I think we do need to sort out a little better, because there's different perspectives on it, is the additional cost to businesses. And different people have done different calculations, but one report indicates that ultimately it's pretty close to break even. And the final thing, one of the smaller generators, well, it's still a large generator, but more than 1/2 a ton a week, included, for example, McDonald's. And I was thinking, some of these fast food places, it may be difficult. But Tim Rose pointed out that he came back from Pennsylvania, and on the thruway, there was a McDonald's, and they were composting food waste, and they weren't complaining about it, and it was working. We do have support from Hannaford, Mohawk Mountain House, Frost Valley, and many other of the large generators. In fact, Frost Valley is sort of offered to mentor any business that wants to compost on site. We have, I think, 6 processing facilities throughout the county and several haulers. And we think it's completely workable and reasonable, and have really worked hard to try to resolve any issues that came up.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on that?
This is a public hearing. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a lot of comments. I'll reserve most of them for later on. I would be a lot more comfortable in holding off on this for a month until after this stakeholders meeting that you have asked for. I know that the public hearing falls after the stakeholders meeting, but this vote doesn't. And I've heard some concerns. I know that council has advised me that the county attorney has, in council's meeting, expressed several issues. The county attorney's office, I believe, has some preemption issues. I think that they have some concerns about our ability to regulate hospitals and schools and things of that nature. And I think that they're real concerns that should be aired before we have a public hearing. If then we would then have to just go right back out to public hearing if we made some of the changes. I also was told, and I wasn't at the meeting, so I don't know for sure, but I was told that the amendments that were made in committee weren't prepared by the end of the committee meeting, and they were sort of, sort of like we did here last month. Well, we're going to allow for passive distribution of condiment packets, and we'll figure out the language later. That. What's that?
I don't recall that.
Yeah, I do. I have concern that something like that, where the committee didn't have the language in hand, all ironed out, could spur a legal challenge, which could be a problem.
There were amendments, but they were redlined in the document.
There was nothing that Dave had to, Council Gordon had to go back and...
Manna, is your do you have
in committee to change the date? Manna, for April to extend the date for enforcement to April instead of January.
That was it.
I was at the last meeting and there were no substantial amendments.
I mean, again, I just think that there have been a significant number of concerns that have been raised by both the county attorney's office, legislators. I know that you say that everyone has different calculations. I think that we should see all the calculations on the cost before we go out to public hearing rather than after.
Well, all right. So it's up to Matta. Do you you want this to go to public hearing this month? Is that correct?
I'm concerned that if we put it off, it's, as it is, it's much later in the year than I had hoped, and there are reasons for that. But by the time we got to meet with the executive branch and work out some of the major unresolved issues, it's now... Public hearing in September would be presumably voted on in October. We already moved the enforcement date, but I really don't want to, if possible, not move the implementation date.
All right, but the only issue that I see, that, I mean, I have no problem moving forward on the public hearing, but if there are substantial changes, then we have to go back, and then it gets shoved out even further. So, I mean, if you want to move forward, I'll support the moving forward, and I think you can get the vote out of that public hearing. But be aware that if there are substantial changes, then we got to go back to the public hearing again, and then that'll kick it back even further. So I'm just,
I have the opportunity after the state, between the stakeholder meeting and the public hearing, I have 5 days. Do I have the opportunity to send it back to committee if there is something substantial?
Because once you approve
the public hearing is set.
Once we approve this version of the law, that's what's set. Yeah. That's what you're moving forward with.
It also wouldn't make sense. I mean, I think the benefit of having the public hearing in an actual legislative session, the argument would be that maybe that would bring more people out, even beyond the stakeholders. But I hear both arguments. I mean, I'm willing to support whatever Manna wants to do in terms of...
I'd personally rather hold off on it. I mean, but that's coming from somebody... I've consented to, like, 300 postponements of an ethics law that's going to affect, the employees and officials of the county. At this point, we're on, like, tweezer detail with different things in the law. There could be substantial changes to this, and this is the first time I'm voting on it because I'm not on environment.
Legislator Roberts?
So.
Yes, I'd like to ask Leader Rock, what are the concerns of the county attorney's office? Are you privy to that?
Our minority council can fill it, but there's some issues of preemption.
All right, okay. What are the issues?
I'm going to defer to Council Gordon. We were both at the meeting, but I let him speak to it.
The primary concern from the county attorney is over preemption. And it's reasonable to say that there is... I mean, it's actually hard to say what's actually going on, but there is a difference of opinion on preemption. I don't know if there's going to be a resolution to that. I wrote a memo, Deputy County Attorney wrote a memo, I'm writing another memo in response to that one, because we're just in different places.
What is the argument? I mean, what is the argument?
Well, the argument basically is that, I mean, there's certain things the state does that what's called preempts the field, which means that once the state preempts the field, you, as a locality, you can't do anything. The question is whether this rises to that level, whether it's something like, you know, speedies, for example. You know, we don't have a local speedies law. In this case, you have basically the state doing a new food waste recycling law, and which is actually very similar to ours, which is a kind of a very novel preemption issue. Usually with preemptions, for example, the state has a mining law which regulates mining, and then a town decides it's going to, let's say, zone out mining using its zoning authority. Well, is that preempted? The answer the courts have said is no. They can actually zone out mining, they can zone out fracking, which was just started a few years ago. In this case, we've actually got a very similar law, and the way we've streamlined it is our law now applies to the facilities and during the time periods that the state's doesn't. And ultimately, the decision, in my view, I mean, just to characterize it, and I hope I'm not being unfair, the decision, in my view, is really looking at the merits of what the legislation is and how we ultimately feel about the state's role and our role. What the county attorney has done is look at some very specific black and white legal issues, and there's a question as to whether or not that is going to override sort of...
But wouldn't the plastic bag law be the same thing then?
We passed
it before. Not preempted until state law goes into effect.
Sure.
I want to just mention that under the plastic bag law, the state legislation had very specific provisions on what localities could do and how they could do it, etc. This law is silent. The state is just absolutely silent, so therefore everybody, it's kind of like the proverbial elephant, you know, it's whatever you want to see into it, and that's essentially where we're at the county attorney's office.
Dave, is that going to be your answer?
Thank you so much.
Clear as mud. Yes.
I just want to say, I want to reiterate sort of in maybe layman's terms what Attorney Gordon just said.
Translate.
And that is this, in terms of field preemption, what the state does say is New York City can have its own law. It doesn't say the rest of the municipalities in New York State can or cannot. It leaves that void. It doesn't specifically say the state preempts the field.
Yeah.
It just is, as he said, silent. So there's, you know, I just want to be clear about that. And we think we have a very good case for going further than the state did. Especially because so many of our businesses are already participating.
Well, the only problem I see there, if the state actually said that New York City can, that indicates to me that the rest of us may not be able to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I would read it as a layman. I would say, well, they said, oh, New York City, you can do this. But it's silent on everybody else. I mean, that to me is a little, I don't know.
New York City already had a law in place. So they weren't going to cancel New York City's law. Our law was in development.
Okay, so that makes it a little different. But, I mean, I'll move forward. It's a public hearing, and if anybody has any else to say,
like to weigh in one last
time.
Oh, Kevin first, please.
Let Kevin go, please.
You know, I've been around here long enough to know that when the county attorney starts using terms like preemption and other legalistic terms, it means they don't want to implement it down the road. So, you know... Am I correct on that?
You're not going to answer that question.
Yeah. Preemption, stuff like that. I mean, come on.
Doesn't John just answer that question, by the way, you looked at you?
I thought I was looking down there.
The head snapped that direction. Legislator Green's comments just now about New York City being specifically allowed... actually makes me more uncomfortable with moving forward on a public hearing than I was before, because the city of New York and other cities, but the city of New York in particular, has immense powers that we don't under New York state law. They can do many things that we can't. They can do many things where the state has preempted us and New York City, but they will specifically highlight New York City. There are other laws that specifically allow, like the SAFE Act specifically allows the commissioners, or is it the chiefs of police of the Nassau and Suffolk County police departments, are additional licensing officers for pistol permits. When the state, but others are not. So they're two of the only officials that are not a judge that are additional licensing officers for pistol permits. So when the state says that one entity can do this or three entities can do this, almost unanimously, it means that the others cannot. They don't always put that no other may, but New York City can. It's usually New York City can, therefore nobody else can.
All right. So anyway, anybody else, or we want to decide on, like, call the question if you don't mind. All right.
At this point, I'll make a motion to postpone it for a month.
All right.
I'll second that.
Motioned and seconded. All right. Okay. All those in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
You don't say aye for it. Say nay.
Nay, whatever. Well, I
vote. I'll teach you all one day.
Against postponement, you can
time.
Say aye, wouldn't you?
The ethics
it is.
Law,
if I said nay, then that's a double negative.
This is a zoo.
What's that?
It all depends on the way the question was asked.
No, but all those opposed, you would say nay.
It's a zoo.
The question is on the postponement itself.
All right, but that's not the way I asked it, actually. But anyway,
it's 8 o'clock. Let's not care.
Okay.
Anyway, let's
all
move
right.
on.
I forgot. Sorry.
It's not postponed. On the issue of the vote, I'd like to call a vote on the public hearing. All those in favor of having the public hearing?
Aye.
Did you say
all those opposed?
Nay.
There you go. See, they know what to do.
Well, you guys are good.
Well, we were just schooled.
Practice.
All righty.
Someone will start tapping the thing three times.
We on 374 now?
We are.
I'll move it for discussion.
And that is the probably appointing elected officials and board election staff from holding any elected public office of any city, town, or village. No, I don't want to say
there, hold on.
What the law is. I don't want to name the person that this law is now.
You want to move that?
Ernest, from the Board of Elections?
For discussion.
But anyway.
I'll move it.
All right, it was moved and seconded for discussion. The discussion.
In the interest of time, I'm not going to make the amendment. What? I'm sorry?
What are you going to make the amendment on what?
There's an amendment needed. Someone brought to my attention that it could be argued that this would apply to all members of unpaid boards and commissions. So I plan to offer an amendment to exempt members of unpaid boards and commissions. But in the interest of time this evening, since I plan to ask for a postponement, I'm not going to bother with the amendment this evening. But I wanted to put it on the table that it's my intention to have an exemption.
All right, and I just want, as you're looking at this postponement, I want you to also look at a few other things. How's that? And, like, for instance, prime example is the blanketing way of you doing this. I'm not sure how... every position, no matter what they are, if they're appointed, they cannot run for, I mean, even if we took that as an exemption.
Mm-hmm.
So you would say that somebody that was appointed in a position in the DPW would not be able to run for elected office in a village?
Are you talking about in a management position or in a laborer's position?
Would be the way you have it is it appointed anybody that's appointed.
Because if you're a laborer, you're protected by CSCA, therefore
that wouldn't
be applicable.
You're talking about appointed, though.
Well,
correct.
No, yeah, but he's also talking about now with regards to, for example, the one example that comes to mind is, wasn't John Parody on the RRA board when he ran for legislature?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore,
but when he got on, he had to resign.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he did resign.
But that's specifically prohibited in the RRA regulation. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm just thinking of just somebody who was appointed, who was, like, elected to something.
I mean, I feel in some cases a blanket one of this nature is a little troublesome to me. I mean, I certainly understand certain positions, like, for instance, the one you pointed out, I agree with.
Yeah.
Members that are appointed in a managerial position in the Board of Elections should not be running for office somewhere.
I don't think any appointments at the Board of Elections should be running for office. You know, there's too much.
I kind of agree, but some of them are. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I agree with that mindset, but I don't know about the blanket across the line.
Okay.
Because your argument would be, then why should you be able to run, you know, since you work, you're in an appointed position in the state.
Mm-hmm. Well,
why should you be running for a position in a county? I mean,
I was going to hope for a postponement so we can avoid, so we can avoid a lengthy discussion tonight. But now we're going to get into a more lengthy discussion. So the answer to that is, and Jonathan falls in the same category, and others in the legislature fall in the same category. First off, my employment with the state assembly is approved by both majority and minority council to be free from conflict of interest. Secondly, as counsel pointed out to me earlier on the phone, we were discussing this, you know, flows downhill. So we're not going to have some of the same conflicts of interest with the state as the town would with the county and the county with the town. There's a lot more interaction with the county and town, and there's a lot more potential for a conflict of interest.
There's a lot more, but it doesn't mean there is none.
Well, and it does, because I'm not a policymaker, nor am I advising my boss, who's the leader of the state assembly, on policy. And there's a difference in state ethics and disclosure laws of policymaker versus non-policymaker. I believe the three of us here at the table are all non-policymakers. So, you know, to me, it's about the ability to affect policy. And if we want to start going through and delineating what we see as a policy-making position and what we see as a non-policy-making position, I'm open to having that discussion. And we could do that. I didn't know if we wanted to have that discussion, but I mean, I'm open to it.
Well, I think it's we may not have to have it now, but I think we need to think about that discussion, because
mm-hmm.
my mindset is I don't think it's a blanket thing would make sense to me, because there's certain people that, like you pointed out, may not be policy settings. I certainly agree, Board of Elections.
I tend to understand what you're saying, but and again, my concern here is we'll use a generic position in the county executive's office, okay? County executive's office is crafting the budget. They're deciding which towns get more funding from A, B, or C, you know, which bridges are going to get replaced, which roads are going to get replaced, and all that happens outside of the public eye. All of that happens in the executive's office, where there's no
comes to the public where there's, because it has to be voted on.
But there's no transparency on when it happens. So there's no transparency on, if a county employee is recusing themselves from a discussion because they're a local town, village, or city official. There's no transparency on the county end. There's transparency only on the town end.
Well, I mean, you could make that argument for a lot of things. John, where do you live? You live in the city of Kingston.
No.
What do you live with?
Not a boat.
Not a boat. Okay, so
you were close.
So no,
one off.
I'm more than you. I thought I didn't think he lived in the city of Kingston. I thought he was just outside the city of Kingston. But
Well,
John works for the county executive.
I live in the city of Kingston.
And I'm not using. I'm not going to. You know, I'm not trying to disparage him in any way. But I mean, so he lives in the town of Ulster, and wouldn't him, he may want to argue to help the town of Ulster out just because he's a member, he's a citizen there. You know, for purposes of,
But it's...
I mean, taxes
it's
and things
different.
Like that.
It's different.
I know it's different, but there is, in other words, I know it's different.
You got to come from somewhere.
A town resident doesn't have a fiduciary responsibility to the town. He may have a nostalgic responsibility to the town,
right, well,
but there's no fiduciary responsibility.
Right, well,
the problem is that there could be people who have a dual fiduciary responsibility, one in their position to the county and one in their position to the town, which are difficult to reconcile.
Right,
and legislators have the ability to recuse themselves publicly we all recuse ourselves publicly when something with our employment comes into conflict, a direct conflict or implied conflict, or a, you know, appearance of impropriety conflict with, you know, with what's happening in our position here. You know, there's no opportunity for a member of the executive staff to publicly recuse themselves from a discussion that breaks the plane of their fiduciary responsibility to the county. My reason for asking for a postponement tonight was because I had a conversation with the county executive, and he asked me for the opportunity for all of us to go back and think about maybe there's a better way to do that.
Right.
Maybe there's a better way to handle that. I've always been open, and I'm saying this on tape. I definitely don't always have the right answer. Sometimes I don't ever have the right answer. But, you know, I put this forward because it's a problem I think that needs to be solved. You know, it's happened a couple of times where I think that there's been some, you know, conflicts, one of them at Board of Elections, and, you know, one of them that was reported in the paper. Of course, the one that spurred this for me wasn't the one that was reported in the paper, but, you know, c'est la vie. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think that we should all think about
what
we should do.
I'd
like to second the postponement.
Well, Kathy wants to talk first.
I think it's quick, but it's potentially big.
I really think that we needed to have some of this discussion before any of the postponement, because I think if we're going to postpone, we want to understand what we're postponing for and
what
needs to be changed.
So in the spirit of what you're going to be looking at, I think that it would be better to have a form in which we prohibit making those appointments rather than try to prohibit somebody from holding an elected office, which is a free speech issue. So I don't think that we can tell them that they can't run for office as easily as we can tell them, as we can tell ourselves, that we won't appoint somebody who's an elected official.
Go ahead.
Thank you. You know, and that argument got me in caucus, and I completely reject that. I mean, insofar as we set limits all the time. Now, I'm not even trying to say again that I'm supporting this or whatever, but I'm just saying in terms of the argument, we set restrictions all the time. The same way that our charter prevents, excuse me, any legislator from holding more than one, you know, elective office. You know, the same way that, I'm sorry, what was that, Mr.?
I'm sorry, I mumbled in theory under my breath, but I
didn't. Oh, okay, there you go. All right, so I thought you were about to debate me on the subject.
No.
Okay, you know, the Hatch Act, you know, exists for a reason, you know, so we set restrictions all the time. I'm not trying to say, by the way, that this is the right way to go and handle it. I believe if the executive has a better solution, we should definitely be pursuing that. But to go and basically declare it an issue of a free speech, it's not, we set restrictions on that all the time with regards to whether or not you're qualified to go and actually hold that office, insofar as that there actually may be restrictions inherent in the position.
All right, let's try to wrap this up because you are postponing it.
This is my last comment. I was willing to postpone it without debate.
My mind said we have
That's
to
fine.
Air some of this so we know what we're postponing it for, technically.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just to Legislator Nolan's point about that, I actually think that this provides more of a free speech than just saying that you can't be appointed to the position, because that's a definite. The legislature is then choosing for the person who is an elected official which office they cannot hold. So you could, under this law, choose between your elected office or your appointed office. I don't think that you're saying that they can't run for office. I think that you're saying you can either be appointed or elected to the local office. So it actually provides for more choice than us saying you have to be an elected official, you can't run, be appointed.
Everybody make sure you have your arguments down for next month and get an understanding and take a look at it. And if you have some specifics, or in other words, as you're pointing out, maybe we do need to look at, you know, individual positions a little closer, policy versus non-policy and so on.
Mr. Chairman, motion to postpone.
Alrighty, so it was already postponed with this discussion.
He's called the question.
I'll call the question on the postponement.
To explain my vote, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. All those in favor of
postponing? I want to explain
my vote.
It
cost me a beer.
Aye.
Long roll. Long roll.
Is that all of them?
Any opposed? None? Alright, very good.
Actually speaking, you're actually supposed to call a long roll as soon as somebody actually says that.
The request has been withdrawn, I'm sure.
Not mine.
Alrighty, we do have some old business, but the campaign finance reform, where are we at?
We're meeting Wednesday.
We're meeting Wednesday.
Okay.
You should have gotten the most updated version this week.
We inch closer to a solution. Right.
The county attorney's office has been given the most recent version, correct?
Yes.
That's a new question I'm going to ask every single time we have a meeting.
All right, I'd like to post
Jay.
I'll move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. Yeah. I got your second. Seconded. All those in favor, adjourn.
Aye.
Any opposed? Done. Adjourn.